is an Enterprise Times podcast. My name is Ian Murphy. I'm here at Appian World, and I'm with Greg Aldana, who's Vice President, Head of Global Consulting. We're going to talk about the DevCon he presented on Monday and what's happening with Appian's developer community. Greg, hi.
Hey, great to meet you. Thanks for having me. I'm here at Appian, and I lead our Global Solutions Consulting organization, which is like pre-sales solutions engineering. I've been with Appian for about 8 months, but I've been in technology my whole life. Before I came to Appian, I spent 8 years at ServiceNow, where I built and led their entire App Engine global consulting team. That was a hell of a journey, meeting with 200 customers a year. Prior to that, I spent 15 years in the U.S. government on the other side, leading and implementing digital transformation at the FDIC, the Selective Service System, Department of Treasury. I started my career out in New York City in the 90s during the whole dot-com boom as a Microsoft consultant, doing work for Microsoft and NBC and Goldman Sachs. But my whole love affair with technology started in the 80s when I saw this movie War Games with Matthew Broderick. It was a hot summer day, and I came home that night, and I told my parents, I know what I want to do for a living. You need to buy me a computer so I can play games and hack into the Department of Defense. But it just started this lifelong love affair I've had with technology. When I had my first Mac in the 80s, I was using it to manage my sports card collection, to go to flea markets and trade cards. I used it to create a fanzine on the rock band Kiss so I could get backstage and meet them. It was just this lifelong pattern of using technology to solve practical problems. Fast forward to 2025 here, and what am I doing at Appian? About a year ago, I decided that I wanted to make a change in my career, and I started looking at other software companies, and I was looking for a company I thought had the most potential to solve a lot of societal problems with their technology. Had a lot of offers to go to a lot of places. I saw something very, very unique with Appian. I saw them really solving a problem for a big gap that existed. Traveling around the world for ServiceNow, meeting with 200 CIOs a year, different industries, different countries, and there was one common theme. There was a missing element. They needed a strategic process orchestration platform to start linking together all the different departments, all of the different systems and peoples, internal and external. And there weren't a lot of good solutions to do that. A lot of companies promising they could do that. I met the founders here and had some friends here, and I found the right place with a technology that I think is going to absolutely redefine how society works over the next 10 years.
Interesting you say redefine, because that was a big part of your keynote on Monday morning. But I'm going to go back to the start of the keynote. You talked about there being 200,000 people in the Appian developer community. The company's historically been very, very wary of giving out numbers. So that's the first real marker we have of where the company is. And you said there was 9,000 certified practitioners out there. Again, a number the company's always been very cautious about giving. What's changed? Why now this aggressive approach to developers, bringing them out of the dark, bringing the practitioners into the light?
I'm being a little cheeky, but I'm actually being honest. I'm definitely bringing a very different element and attitude and energy to this company. When I first interviewed here, I'd heard a lot of things about Appian. I heard they've been stuck in a certain pattern for many years. Things you said they're very protective about, they're not out there. I met with the founders, and I was very clear very early on. I said, look, I'm a change agent. I'm an agent of change. I like to grow companies and grow businesses. That's why I was leaving my last company, because they've plateaued and they're too big now. I love Appian because I see so much growth potential. So I said, if you're not interested in growing and changing, don't hire me. Because if you do and you just want to keep the status quo, I'll get bored and you'll get pissed off. They're like, no, we like your energy. We like your strategy and your growth approach to it. What I heard from all of the founders, and I've spent time with all of them, we realize, Greg, what got us here to this point over the last 25 years is not what's going to get us to the next level. So we are very open to new approaches and new ideas and new ways of communicating what our technology can do and the impact it's actually having. A little cheeky, yeah, I'm here, but it's part of this movement that I'm driving within the company with a lot of other new people here.
But that's also interesting to me, because I've been saying all week that I've followed Appian for a very long time. I have a long relationship with this company. But this year, the sudden acceleration of products, the sudden acceleration of a lot of things, 25.2 to me looks like it's set to be the biggest change ever for this company.
You're damn right it is.
But bringing developers into that is always difficult. developers in a community are often kept to one side. If they're really good, you maybe call them out occasionally on a stage, or you send them a cap or a t-shirt. We don't do enough to elevate developers in our community. How do you change that? How do you move from this just, oh, MVP, come to an event, to making those developers want to be there and therefore drive new innovation?
It goes back to what motivates and drives developers. I've been a developer my whole life. After I saw War Games in the 80s, I begged my mom to send me to computer camp. I was some woman's basement in Cupsall Lake in Ringwood, New Jersey, and I was sitting there while other kids were going to baseball camp. I'm sitting there on the Apple IIe doing Logo and Basic. So I know what has always driven me as a developer. I want to impact change. I want to change things. I want to create things. People don't realize how creative developers actually are. They're not just the computer scientists behind the scenes hatching plans. I've always taken this approach about start with the why, start with the purpose. When I look at the outcomes and the transformation that Appian technology and Appian developers are driving, and what they're going to be able to drive now with a lot of the new innovations that were coming in 25.2 and 25.3 and 4, I've seen the roadmap, I'm like, Appian developers are going to become some of the most important people in business and enterprise and governments and society over the next 10 years. I want to give them a window into what they're going to be able to drive and change, because I know that motivates developers. It's not just about writing cool code or making a cool mobile app. It's about changing things and having an impact. Look what I can do and look what I can build. A few years ago, I talked with a publication when AI and text-to-code was first emerging. They're like, so, Greg, they're not going to need developers anymore in society, right? AI can do it. I'm like, okay, that's an interesting theory. Actually, just the opposite. You're going to need developers more than ever now, and here's why. Because developers are going to be able to do things on a scale and at a pace that you never imagined. What's going to happen is what used to take a team of 10 developers 2 years to do, a single developer is going to be able to do in a few hours now. And that's not an exaggeration. That's reality. So just think about the scope and the impact of the change that developers are going to be able to do. These ideas they've had in their head and these visions and all these intricate processes and things they've wanted to orchestrate and automate for years, they can do that now in record time at a scale never imagined. So developers are going to be the change agents and the architects of society moving forward.
But that's not a new statement. I can remember 1988, while you were still very young, people saying that object orientation will mean we'll have just a small number of developers in the business. Everything will be assembled by business architects. We have multitudes of developers compared to that, and that will continue. But the key to improving things for developers is the tooling. It's the coherence of the tooling, it's the quality of the tooling, and it's tooling that works the way they need to work. How do you convince them that you have the right tooling? How do you get them to tell you what they need? Because developers, well, bit of an eclectic bunch. Yes. You can put 10 developers in the room, put the greatest tool on the table, and they'll all have a different opinion of it, and it won't always be positive. How do you bring those on that journey with you?
You have to listen. You have to have an open mind. A lot of software companies and a lot of technology companies think they know best. They're smarter than everyone else out there. We're going to show you the way. This is where you have to empathize with your target audience about what they want and what they need, and you have to really listen. What I noticed coming into Appian is they were really listening and surveying developers, and not just surveying them to get some fancy numbers and do a polling. It was to help drive the direction of where we're going as a company. A lot of customers and people that I'm meeting with now globally, I get the question, why did you move from ServiceNow to Appian? Why should I build something on Appian? Couldn't I do the same thing with Microsoft or Salesforce or Pega? The choices are endless. What makes Appian so different? And I said, what makes Appian very different is that a lot of these other development technologies are either very siloed into a particular line of business or business purpose or on help desks or customer relationships or personal productivity or a niche tool to just do one part of development. What's very different about the Appian platform is that it was purpose-built and designed from the ground up for developers to enable developers to orchestrate very complex things very easily. I was meeting with a customer a few months ago, and they were asking me, should I use this platform or should I use Appian? And it was a very popular platform, and I don't want to mention the name. And I said, look, could you build the security mobile offline for your theme parks security thing, mobile offline to document security incidents? Could you build it in this other technology that maybe I sold you a few years ago? You could. It'll probably take you about 9 months, and you'd have about 60% of the features you need. Or you could build it on Appian in 3 weeks and have 100% of the features you want. We went into a lot more detail behind that, and then was why. And it's because when you try to orchestrate things on Appian as a developer, and I've used it, everything is just built together in a very productive way. If I'm in my process designer and I want to put in an RPA bot, or I want to bring in an API routine or Copilot, it's just drag and drop. They're all there in one area, where with other platforms, it's like a Frankenstein. Yes, they have RPA, and they have process mining, and they have portal editing and these things, but they're all separate tools, and you've got to stitch them together. They're under the same umbrella as a company, but they don't really work together in a very efficient way. We're bringing a lot of joy to developers. This is a fun platform to build on because all the things work so cohesively together. And as you saw on Monday in the keynote, we're doubling down on that now. Now you've got prompts where you can just type in natural language and start building things out very quickly. It's like a dream come true. I'm just so excited to be here at this point.
I'm going to come back to that integration in a second. But I've been pre-sale support. I've been that guy who sat there next to the salesman with the customer and started to put that initial proof of concept together. And I know that gap between that tool that allows me to build that proof of concept and then the final product. And it's huge. Everybody says, we will get rid of that gap. And I'm talking about doing this back in the 80s, and nothing has changed with most tools out there. I've been through all those generations of rapid application development and agile and all the change we've had. How do you convince those developers that you're absolutely serious about changing this speed of development, not just in the proof of concept, not just in the it looks good to the board, but actually when it gets to the ground, it's supportable, it's extensible, it performs as you need it to do, and you don't spend your life dealing with technical debt because actually you kludged that feature because you didn't really know how you were going to do it.
You have to prove it. You have to show proof. Not PowerPoint slides, not animated GIFs, like you said, not demos or proof of concepts. Real live production apps. I don't know if you noticed the whole week here at Appian World, but I've had a lot of people come up to me. They're like, the customer stories are different this year. I'm like, yeah, they are, aren't they? Not only do you see the business transformation outcomes that the solutions are driving, they talk about how fast it took to get there. They talk about the implementation. Aon was on stage talking about a lot of the business transformation, but I don't know if you picked up on it. She talked about 2-week sprints. I was in Prague 2 weeks ago at an Appian Life Science event. Santos was there, and it was their legal department that was talking about you had to automate their insider trading auditing process and to make sure different countries have different rules. A couple months to get it up and running. The greatest thing about Appian's technology is that we have 2-week sprint cycles. Any business requirements I need to update, and there's a lot of requirements we have to update, I don't have to wait months and months like I do with other technologies. Every 2 weeks, we can update Appian software. It's that quick and easy for our development teams to do it. And we heard Aon say the same thing. It's showing these proof points. We're not just saying this stuff. It's not a company tagline. We have developers all over the world in different industries and different companies doing it.
But we have set KPIs that we've used over the years in this industry. How good is my code? Can I improve that code? What's my bugs per 1,000 lines of code? How big is my technical debt? When you now look at your customers out there, how soon before you start to produce a state of Appian coding report that tells us how low that technical debt is, how few errors there are per line of 1,000 code, how fast they're doing it, and how optimized that code is? Are we going to see that within the next 6 months? Is that even something on your roadmap to deliver to those developers?
I'm going to take a very different take on this here. I don't think people are going to care about those things moving forward. I don't think those things are going to be as important. 20 years ago, I worked at a CMMI level 5. I certified in the personal software process where I had to measure errors per key lock, 1,000 lines of code, had to run these reports, which meant we had to do optimization at the end of every sprint and redo our process. I wish I had AI back then. It would have helped things a lot. These tools and these copilots are abstracting people from a lot of those language and coding problems. Is it eliminating it? No. But is it helping the quality and the examination? I had a customer this weekend saying, can I use Appian to write all the regression tests and testing routines and then use the AI to help me write reports so I could do this faster? And we're like, yeah, we talked about a couple of customers that have done this. So they're actually using Appian technology to help them write Appian applications better. I don't necessarily know if you're going to see Appian come out with reports and show you keylock and things like that. Appian's going to help you do that in a much better way, so that's not a big of a concern anymore. When you're manually doing that, that's a big concern. And when you're writing C++ code from scratch or JavaScript code or you're doing a lot of these things here, no code and low code becomes less of a concern and more just the transformative outcomes and what you can actually produce. And the quality has to go with, let's measure the defects in production. Not the defects in the code. Let's look at the defects in production. How often are these things failing? And that's where Appian does. We have a lot of reporting, and that's in our roadmap to make that type of reporting more. So,
one of the things that's been on my radar for the last year is the number of vendors saying, oh yeah, we'll get AI to write the code for you. And they'll make statements like, your code will be better, there'll be less bugs in it. Well, here's the problem. Every compiled application out there, every interpreted application out there has syntactically correct code. When vendors say to me that AI will improve your developer's speed by giving them syntactically correct code, that does not mean secure code. It also does not mean code that makes any sense. We don't integrate our security tools to these AI code writing tools so that it doesn't understand what a vulnerability is. It doesn't understand what certain indicators of compromise might look like when it's writing code. Additionally, would you allow any of your developers to write code, write their own test, self-certify, and say, hey, Greg, look, this is shit-hot code? The answer's probably no, isn't it?
Yeah, probably not. We probably want a separate group to sign off and audit and take a look.
So why are we using the same AI to write the unit tests that wrote the code? Surely we should be using a separate engine once we start to talk about producing the tests and improving code quality, because otherwise, anything that first one doesn't see, you're never going to pick up, because it's just going to repeat the mistake.
It might be a false assumption in your question that you are using the same engine. The nice thing about Appian's approach to AI is you can bring your own LLM. You can bring your own engine. You don't have to just use the underlying. We're built on top of Bedrock on Amazon's stack.
I have only spoken to two developer companies in the last 6 months who say to me that they would use a separate engine to write the unit tests as opposed to helping developers with code. So it's not a false assumption, it's one proven by constant conversation with developer vendors out there.
Huh, interesting. Like you said, why would you have the same developer that wrote the code examine the code, self-certify it? It's not a bad point here. I don't think we've delved that deep into that yet.
You made an interesting statement from stage on Monday. You said, I know there's a bunch of companies out there who are saying that they have a data fabric. Well, that's a bunch of PR. Ours, Appian, is the only data fabric. That's a bit of a dog whistle, isn't it?
It's a big, bold statement. I've taken a look at what a lot of companies are calling data fabric, and when you peel back the layers, what do I see? I see remote tables, I see querying, I see complex joins, I see an API integration engine. I don't see what is a real virtualized, patented, managed data fabric with both bidirectional read-write access, more than 5,000 record limitations. Again, I don't want to mention competitor names, but go research the limitations of some of these help desk-based things called data fabric or CRM-based zero copy or personal productivity limitations. You're going to find out that the promise and the advertising does not meet the actual implementation of it. I was just astonished when I arrived at Appian last September. We launched our patented data fabric back in late 2022 before anybody was talking about data fabric. And Appian did it out of just a need to build these cross-departmental workflows, process orchestrations from an end. We need this managed virtual layer that can be bidirectional so that if I need to bring together and have a developer write something about a vendor and I need some information from SAP and an RPA bot's got to go into this mainframe system and grab something and there's a spreadsheet over here on somebody's desktop and I got to bring an external feed, we can just give them this one virtual object that says, here's the vendor, you don't have to worry about reconciling it. We'll have the data fabric automatically manage that for you so you don't have to pull the data in. If it changes underneath, it can be intelligent enough to point at a new SAP instance, ECC to S4HANA. It was just purpose-built for that. We weren't trying to do a buzzword. We just called it Data Fabric because that's what it was. And now we've been using this in production. We have multiple customers that have proof points. I'm just astonished by this. And I go look at these other companies that say they have it. They don't have it. They're plugging into Snowflake data lakes and saying, that's zero copy. Well, that's not in your platform, and you still got to go somewhere else to do it, and it's not going to be able to do the reconciliation. There's one company that I'm very familiar with. It can read only. That's not a data fabric.
It's interesting because I'm an industry analyst as well as a journalist. Yeah. I look at all the reports and stuff I've worked on over the years, and data fabric as a term is not a new term. We've had it for at least two decades.
Gardner's kind of hopped on it lately. The last couple of years, I mean lately.
Shocker. But we've had it for a couple of decades, and we've called it different things, but it's all really been the same thing. How do we get to our data faster, simpler, and do it? What has been the inhibitor to people then beating you to this? What did you just suddenly pull out of the air to make it come together like this?
If you look at the roots of Appian, Appian didn't start as a software company. Started the story of the four founders, four guys from Dartmouth, former MicroStrategy, and they started off as a consulting company, just doing digital transformation and automation with the government, guys in the D.C. area, Virginia area. That's been the DNA of the company. How do we deliver these projects and these outcomes and these transformations to companies? The data fabric wasn't built out of a marketing need, or we analyzed the market, and if we do this, we can sell this. This is an upcoming feature that the analysts are telling we should invest in, our venture capitalists. It was done out of a real need. This was a pain point in a lot of the projects that Appian in the 2010s was encountering. The Appian platform was built in, I believe, 2004 or 2006, out of a need to deliver projects better. If we build our own software platform, we can deliver these projects faster. And that was the same impetus behind building the data fabric. It was a need to be able to provide these cross-departmental workflows and end-to-end process orchestrations faster. When you're motivated by a real purpose rather than, I've surveyed the competitive market and our analysts and board of directors said we should have this feature. Having been a part of another software company and gotten insight, and I've hired people from Microsoft and Salesforce, I get insight, a lot of those companies, that's their problem. They're trying to just build the list of all the cool things they need to get the market cap up and get the stock price up and sell lots of things. Appian's not focused on that. They're focused on the purpose. And it reminds me, and I have something in common with the founders. We're all in the same age group. We have a worship for Steve Jobs and Steve Wozniak. They didn't build Apple out of a need to make money. They wanted to build the computer they always wanted that wasn't out there. It was built with purpose in mind. It wasn't built with profit in mind. It was, we want to build something we would use. Appian takes the approach. We want to build the features on the platform we need to deliver better solutions. As a developer, what do I need so I can build this great end-to-end solution for the Army?
But that's an interesting challenge, though, for developers. I remember when we started turning developers into DBAs. Why? Because they needed to understand the data. They needed to be able to take SQL, encapsulate it in their code. We then turned them into pseudo-network engineers before finally in the mid-90s saying to them, you no longer need to write your own WinSock drivers. Guess what? Assume the network is there. The big story for Bluetooth was, by the time we got to 2004, just assume Bluetooth is there. We've never just assumed the data is there. It's always been an intermediate step. And to that extent, we've ended up with data scientists, data analysts, a lot of jobs that maybe just say the same thing, but they just have a fancier title over years. But we're still not saying to developers, just assume the data is there. I look at Data Fabric, I listen to you, I've listened to Matt many times, to Michael, spoken to a lot of people. And your shtick here really is, just assume the data is there. So why don't you all go out and say that?
We're starting to. I think you heard me loud and clear this week. We're beginning a new communication and marketing strategy. It is the number one differentiator about Appian amongst all of the competitors in this space. Spoke with a lot of analysts from Gartner this week, and what is the differentiator? Why are you here? What do you think? Because everything else that we showed off this week, the AI Composer and the Copilots and the Process Mining and Process HQ, it all is built on top of that data fabric. When you talk to our customers about the value, that this is great. I'll give you a great example of just the real-world implication of this that just blew me away when I first got here. This great engagement, it's public. We won this contract with the U.S. Army to be their agility layer on top of all of their ERP systems. There's some heavy hitters. Microsoft, ServiceNow, Salesforce, Army owns every technology. I don't think it was a cost-only thing, regardless of what Doge is doing. They were looking for what is the best technology. And for them, How could they have one technology where I want to manage the entire supply chain process of ammunition from the specking of it? I have to bid out who's going to produce and manufacture the ammunition that I need. Who do I bid? How do I manage that process to the procurement of buying it, purchasing it, to the internal, now where do I store that in depots and warehouses and the distribution of that, all the way down to the commanders ordering it and getting it installed at different bases globally, all the way down to the warfighter in the field ordering it in a mobile offline application that can sync for days and then sync and reconcile with SAP the inventory levels. There was very little technologies that could stitch all of those different entities, internal, external, SAP systems, mainframe systems, desktop systems. People were sending emails to manually enter into SAP to place ammunition orders. It was such a cumbersome problem, and we loved that during the prototyping phase, we were the only one with our data fabric that could clearly link all of those things together so they could get one process map and process HQ and analyze that process from end to end, regardless where the entities were, what technologies, RPA bots, APIs, it didn't matter. That's such a great story because you think about all those different entities as a developer, that's a big challenge. A lot of DBAs involved in that.
I'd like to come back to how you change the mindset of developers. Because we keep coming back to that word process again and again and again. And in a developer world, process is something not created by them. It's created by people over there. Process is something that eventually our code has to meet. But that's not Appian's position. Appian's position is the process is everything. Effectively what we're doing now, when I look at the tools you were showing on stage, is we've now got developers writing process and everything spins from that. That's a mindset change. A bigger mindset change than teaching them to become DBAs and everything else. You will have a lot of developers in your ecosystem who aren't by default process people. There are a lot of people out there who could become Appian developers because they are process people. We come back to how are you going to change that developer community? How do you now make developer synonymous with process?
It's a great question. I have a lot of detailed thoughts on this I'd like to share with you because I think it's a bigger question. I meet with about 200 companies a year, and I do that voluntarily. People think I travel all the time because I want to run up my frequent flyer miles. That's not it. I do love my family, and I do miss them. But I'm very excited about hearing and meeting with different companies in different industries and finding out what works and what doesn't work, what makes other companies very successful, what doesn't, what CIOs get it right, get it wrong, what do they do? I'm going to answer your question, but I'm going to do it in a roundabout way. What I'm seeing is the most successful companies is where the CIO has a much bigger seat at the table, where the CIO reports directly to the CEO. They're not support mechanism under the COO or the CFO or the CHR, where you're just the tech guy, you take the orders, we'll give you the requirements, we'll tell you what we need. Because the way technology is evolving right now more than ever, technology is a driver in business. It can change the way a company conducts business. It's not the other way around. We're going to conduct business this way. We'll tell you how to do the technology. The really successful forward-looking companies have that chief information officer, chief digital officer, different titles. They report directly to the board, to the CEO, because they're shaping and driving what the strategy can do, what the company can do. They don't even know it. It's not the other way around.
So let me just pause you there. It's not just about the CIO. If I look at a modern company now, I've got a chief information officer, a chief information security officer. I might have two or three because they have different focuses. One might be a technical CISO, one might be less. I've got chief data officers. I've got chief AI officers. I've got chief privacy officers. They all have a finger in that tech pie. They can't all be reporting directly to the CIO. So how do you structure this?
I'm using the CIO as a kind of a catch-all paradigm. I've seen a lot of chief digital, chief experience officer, and they roll in different ways. But the point I'm trying to make, and I'll relate it back to your question about developers changing, is that the very successful companies, the person that's managing that ecosystem of development and technologies and security and data is driving and actually shaping the way the company or the entity can and can't do business. No longer just the requirements take off to the side. Now you extrapolate that down to the developers not just sitting there waiting for requirements anymore. They're actually a much more active part of these business teams. They're embedded. Shadow IT is coming out of the shadows because people now have access to tools, personalized, professionalized, where they can start to drive and shape things. I'm even doing the same thing in my profession at Appian. I've launched this whole new initiative called SC 2.0, Next Generation Solutions Consultant. When I first showed up at Appian, they were a very old school way of doing solutions consulting and pre-sales. The SCs, the techies in the sales cycle were just sitting there waiting for the requirements and the qualification from the seller, and I just didn't stage through and I'll do the technical win. That's all I care about. I said, I've done this a different way in my old company. SCs are there in the beginning from stage 1 through stage 7, not just stage 3 and 4. We're there during the discovery, listening to the problems, because SCs are driving the different ideas. One thing that I did at ServiceNow that was very creative in the early days when I was running this app dev consulting business was, that was a help desk company. People were like, well, what can I do with a platform? But what I started doing is I started hiring designers with my developers and pre-sales, and we would go out and do human-centered design sprints with companies in a pre-sales capacity. And let's reimagine what the process could be before we automate it. My developers were working side by side with my designers, and they were driving that. They were being process consultants. Developers aren't just coders anymore and people that are doing automation. They're reshaping and helping people rethink the way they can do their business processes and how they can reshape their business. I think a lot of developers want to do that. I want to do that. I want to be involved in reshaping and reformatting businesses. When I meet with 200 different companies a year in different industries, I'm seeing different ways they do processes. We're the process company. You're not just there to show them what our tech can do. You're there to be a process expert. I have SCs that are building all kinds of solutions in Appian for insurance companies. Well, guess what? Now they can go to AIG and Allstate and Aon and say, you know what? I'm seeing different ways companies do these processes within insurance. Let me give you some insight into that. That's way more valuable than, let me show you how you can code it. Let me show you how our data fabric works. Let me show you how I can integrate these 7 systems here. Let me show you how we can underwrite insurance claims much faster. I'll show you the what and the how, but let me show you the why and how this can actually operate differently. Developers are graduating, becoming much more influential in this thing, and the tools that you saw this week are the vehicle to allow them to do this.
Let's step back to rapid application development. That was get that developer sitting out there with those people. Let's go to Agile. It was, let's embed developers in those teams. In all of our stand-ups, we're going to have people from the business unit as well as the dev team and the test team and everybody else. Developers have been pushing this boundary for a while, but in order to accelerate software, given our lag of the work, we've embraced the citizen developer and we've started to bring those in.
The term developer is changing.
Correct. But the one thing that isn't changing is at the moment it's all about code. We still think all about code, not about that 1988 idea of object orientation of business analyst assembling components. So how do we not lose that code knowledge? Because we can take these and do it, but we're not going to be touching 98% of the code base out there. How do we persuade the next generation of developers that this is a whole new world where they're not going to be sitting there, and to use an old adage, listening for how fast the popcorn's popping on top of the mainframe to know how fast the CPU's running?
It's evolving. I don't think it's going to be as important. Maybe that's my counterculture narrative on this. If you look at every 10 years or every 20 years, people are abstracting from that, and they don't need to have that syntactical knowledge of code anymore. And by abstracting, they can do this in natural language. They have ideas in their heads of how they want to do stuff, and they're not slowed down by learning the C++ syntax or the JavaScript syntax. Now I can do it in natural language, in my native tongue, in English or in Spanish or whatever it may be, and it translates it into, I've got this idea. It just takes me so long to code the different routines to actually do this. The AI is helping developers get their ideas out there much, much faster.
Are we risking de-skilling? Look at what we did with all the tools we brought in around network engineering. I started in this business teaching people how to be network traces. You'd be hard-pushed to find a network engineer these days who could actually recognize a three-way handshake, let alone know what's going on the network, because the tools took it away. Same for IT admin, the tools took it away. How do we not take away the essence of developers? Or should we just now completely say, well, okay, that was great for that moment in time. This is a new world, and maybe this is that whole counterculture argument you just suggested you want to play.
I definitely say it's a new world, and it's changing. the problems that developers have to worry about and solve, they're not the same problems they were in the 80s, the 90s, the 2010s, or even the 2020s. I think it's changing for the 2030s. If you go back in time and you look in the 1800s, the problems people have is, like, hey, you don't know how to go out and rake the field anymore, and you don't know how to do all these menial things that I used to have to do. You're not as skilled now. What are you talking about? My skills have evolved. Look at the problems that I'm solving now. The developers in the 30s and 40s are going to be laughing at this conversation. You guys will code? What are you talking about? I'm building cities. I'm reimagining engineering things that wasn't even possible. You guys are worried about syntactical code and creativeness? We're on to bigger problems now. We're trying to solve the communications between Mars and the moon. What are you guys talking about? People's task lists are going to change. A developer's task list, I'm not worried about unit tests and lines of code and errors anymore. I'm worried about solving much bigger problems and taking on bigger architectural and maybe societal challenges. I'm solving different types of problems. If you look at the evolution of that, what were the developers in the 60s solving? Not the same thing they were in the 80s, not the same things that the dot-com guys in the 90s or the people in the 2010s. I was having this conversation with Mike Beckley last night. In 2010, nobody knew who the winners were going to be in the cloud races. Nobody had Amazon and Azure. It was like people had all got Verizon. There were all kinds of. Now everyone's trying to bet on who's going to be in the AI. Things change rapidly, and when we look back, it makes so much sense. Of course, we're onto that. We don't debug things the way. We don't have the same problems anymore. Now you just assume Bluetooth is there. You assume the network is there. I'm not getting down to those low-level problems anymore. I'm onto much more higher-level, sophisticated problems. When data fabric just becomes a societal thing, and on demand you can get access to anything, you think about we're solving a different type of problem now. The creativity and the things that you can do now, I've got these big ideas. And so the big thinkers are going to become that much more powerful.
I can't wait to watch the next year. I think the culture shock that you are setting up for the developers in Appian and the company itself, it's going to be fun to watch.
It's an exciting time. And to me, it's being about the right place at the right time. And being a developer on Appian right now, you are set up to be really powerful this century.
Greg, thank you for taking time with me.
It's been my pleasure. Great conversation.